Ken, Nancy, Mary, Howie, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. If you all indulge me just a minute, can we give a round of applause to everybody that had a hand in preparing and serving this meal for us? Hi, friends. I'm an alcoholic and can't manage my own life. My name is Bob. I was trying to had a conversation with somebody a few weeks ago, and was trying to explain to a non-alcoholic what the difference was between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic. And I said, well, it's kind of like this. If they both get pulled over for DUI and they're both in a drunk tank, the non-alcoholic is over in the corner going, why did I have 5 drinks? I never have 5 drinks. I had 5 drinks and I got in a car and I drove and I could have killed somebody's child. I could have killed myself. Why did I have 5 drinks? And real alcoholics in the other corner going, man, I knew I shouldn't have taken a turnpike. Now, what being an alcoholic means to me, and this had to be explained to me, is that I have a physical allergy to alcohol, and the manifestation of that allergy is that I cannot drink safely. Once I start drinking, I have no control over how much I'm going to drink. My father has a shrimp allergy. Do y'all want to know how my father treats a shrimp allergy? He don't eat shrimp. He does not go through the thought process. I haven't had any shrimp in 90 days. You know, it's that black tiger shrimp from Indonesia that's been doing it to me. If I stick to good old American Gulf shrimp, I'll be okay. I know I can't eat shrimp down here in Florida. I bet if I moved back to North Carolina, I'd be all right. I could eat shrimp up there. He doesn't think that way. So if all there was to it was that I was allergic to alcohol and that I couldn't drink it safely, I wouldn't be here. I would be sitting at home right now not drinking comfortably. But there's a switch in my head that doesn't close right or something. And every once in a while I get the thought that I can drink like everybody else does, and it's going to be different this time. And it never was. It never was. When I was 10 years old, and we moved around a lot when I was a kid. We finally ended up down here. I was in sixth grade. My father's company moved us a lot. And when I was 10 years old, a knot showed up in the pit of my stomach. And it told me that I was somehow different than and separate from everybody else. I didn't know why. I didn't know how. But I knew that. As certain as I knew my own name, that I was somehow different. My parents went out of town when I was 15. My older brother had a party, and at that party, I took some orange juice and I poured some gin into it, and I drank it, and that knot dissolved for the first time in 5 years. For the first time that I could remember, I was comfortable in my own skin. And it worked so well, I had 6 more of those. Threw up, passed out, woke up somewhere in the middle of the night in my own bed, feeling worse than I'd ever felt in my young life. And the immediate thought that came to me was, I can't wait to do that again. Now, if I knew what I knew now, I would have said, oh, hey, it's a phenomenon of craving, just like it says in the doctor's opinion. I better get to an AA meeting. Get me a sponsor. That was not the thought process of that 15-year-old boy. Drank all through high school, managed to go to college, managed to actually graduate college somehow. Early on, I'd gotten into the restaurant business. And I remember being a busboy in a crab house in Sunrise, Florida. And after the second week, I went into the owner and said, I'd rather lick the plates clean with my tongue than work in your dining room again. The next week I was on a dishwasher schedule, and I've been in the kitchen ever since. So I graduate college, and along the way, too, because my brother, older brother, was a guitar player, I'd somehow picked up somewhat of an ability to play harmonica. So I'm cooking in a restaurant, and I'm playing blues in a bar at night. Cooking in a restaurant, playing music in a bar at night. If anybody can come up with two more alcoholic-enabling jobs, please let me know what they are, you know. I don't know that I drew a sober breath, you know, until I was almost 31 years old, which was the first time I got sober. Managed to go from job to job to job to job, which was easy to do in my profession. And I was playing music in a band at night on the weekends. And I had a guy that I was playing music with. And he didn't drink. I didn't really know why he didn't drink. I just knew he didn't drink. And found out later that, you know, he was one of you. And I guess he was, looking back on it, he was about 4 years sober at the time. And it got to a point where I just had had enough. And it was a Friday night. It was in April of 1991. And I went to him after one of our Friday night gigs, and I said, I know you're in that AA thing. Just, you know, tell me what I need to do because I can't live like this anymore. He said, well, let's get you home. When you wake up, I want you to look up Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book, and I want you to call that number. Well, I got home, and that was Friday going into Saturday morning. I didn't make the call right away, but I didn't drink over that weekend either. It's something I didn't want to. There was something that was fundamentally different. I just knew I was done. And the following Monday, I actually picked up the courage to pick up that 10,000-pound telephone, looked up Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book. So this is April 7th, 1991. So if any of y'all were on the phone that day, thank you. I called a number. Somebody told me I needed to go to a 5:30 meeting at what was then called the Margate Club on 441. And I got there. I remember two things about that meeting. I remember sitting down right in front of the steps on the wall and looking up, and that word sanity jumped out at me from the second step. It says, oh, okay, it makes sense. I've been insane. Good, now I know what it is. Now, I thought the insanity was the DUIs, the cracked up cars, the broken relationships, the lost jobs, the disappointed family members, but no. Later on, y'all explain to me. What we're talking about there is that insanity that precedes the first drink, that little thought, that switch that doesn't close in your head right, that says, it'll be different this time. So I also remember a guy named Fred giving me a white chip at the end of that meeting. I would love to stand here and say that was the last white chip I got, but a little more about that later. Latched on to a big book thumping sponsor named Charlie, and in the first year, I managed to get through the first three steps under Charlie's tutelage. And then I was a year sober, and a month after my first anniversary, he said, you know, me and my sponsor are going to this big book seminar at Palm Air. We think it'd be a good idea if you came with us. It's all right. So I went to that seminar and got to listen to a couple guys named Joe and Charlie and a woman named Willie B. And most importantly, I learned how to do a fourth step in that seminar. So right out of that seminar, I immediately did a fourth, and then I sat down with Charlie in my living room and did a fifth step. And then Charlie moved away. And I'm looking around and says, you know, nobody knows what step I'm on. And here, you know, I'm an intergroup rep, and I'm active in my home group, and I'm going to a lot of meetings. I think I'll be okay. I think I can do this. Just with that knowledge, that the cellular level knowledge that I'm an alcoholic is going to be enough for me, along with the fellowship that I experience in the meetings. That's going to be enough. I'll be okay. I don't need to do the rest of those steps. It's about 3 years later, I'm 8 years sober, and I'm sitting in a meeting at the West Brower Club. Back when it was on Hiatus Road. And a thought occurred to me, if I hear one more AA slogan, I'm going to puke. And I walked out of that meeting in the middle of it. And that was the last meeting I went to for a long, long time. Stayed sober another 5 years, if you want to call it that. But at the end of those 5 years, I'd been 13 years sober, and about a week after my anniversary went by, 13th anniversary went by, completely unnoticed, I took a drink of liquor like it was my next breath. Gave it absolutely no more thought than that. Stayed drunk for 2.5 years. Now, I do remember sitting at home with a bottle of Jim Beam during this relapse, thinking to myself, I wonder if AA is doing all right without me. When I came back, I found out, yeah, y'all had done just fine. And a couple interesting things happened during this relapse. I remember one time, I'm in the liquor store, and I look up and see this bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. And I would have drank any bourbon in the world, but when it came to scotch, I was a total snob. And I'd heard about this Johnny Walker Blue stuff, how great it was. I said, well, you know, I'm drinking anyway. Well, you find out what the deal is with this Johnny Walker Blue. Then I found out how much it cost. And my keen intellectual alcoholic mind immediately calculated how much Jim Beam I could buy for that price. God is my witness, I have no idea what Johnny Walker Blue tastes like. Another thing that happened was I had started working, gone back into the hotel business, and a guy that was a couple of rungs above me on the organizational chart at that hotel was going to be the co-chair of the food prep committee of the gratitude dinner. And he got me involved with that. And he was also going to a big book seminar. And I had heard this was going to be the last big book seminar that Willie B was going to do. And I really wanted a copy of her talk on the steps. And I asked him to get one for me. He said, absolutely. Well, he comes back from the seminar, and he didn't get the Willie B talk for me. He got the Joe and Charlie part, what goes through the big book. That wasn't what I wanted. And I stopped myself just short of chewing him out about it. So I took them home, those CDs home. I put them on the shelf, not to think of it much again. We do the 2005 gratitude dinner. And I'm actively relapsing. He doesn't realize it. And a gentleman that ended up becoming my current sponsor came in, and he was the chair of the committee. They came into our kitchen at the hotel the night before, and we prepared a lot of the meal, and hauled it down to Walter C. Young Center the next morning. And that dinner went very well. So well, in fact, that gentleman asked me to be the co-chair next year. I said, sure! Because the guy I was working for moved up to Birmingham, Alabama, so he wasn't going to be there anymore. And then my friend also tells me, that, oh, by the way, I'm also on the committee for the Stepping Stones and the House of Hope, and our gala is the same night as the gratitude dinner, so I'm not going to be there at the gratitude dinner. So I'm going to gratitude planning meetings, actively relapsing. And the day of the dinner comes, and I have a couple of drinks that morning just to calm myself down, get there. We pulled the dinner off okay. Now, you know, in the middle of those dinners, there's this thing where that thing we do where we make all of our old-timers stand in one place for 20 minutes? The sobriety countdown? Well, there were people in the dinner who knew me to be sober at that point, or thought me to be sober, I should say. So I was not going to be such a hypocrite as to stand up there and then sit down. So I found something to do in the kitchen until the time that I would have been sober had passed. And I came back in quietly, took my seat. So if you were at the 2005 or 2006 gratitude dinner, and I haven't talked to you already, get with me after this talk because I have an amends for you. So I got home from that dinner, and I didn't have to be any place except my part-time job at 2 o'clock Monday afternoon. So the rest of Saturday night, all day Sunday, and most of the day Monday, I spent drinking. Went into that kitchen, all set to work with fire and knives. They realized what the problem was, and they sent me home. Didn't offer to get me a cab or anything. They said, no, you have to leave. Somehow managed to drive home. And when I got home, I knew, once again, I was having another one of those moments of clarity. And I didn't know anybody to call except the guy that had been, got me to do the gratitude dinner. So called him up, asked him to meet me. And I was living in West Sunrise then, so would you meet me at a 5:30 meeting at the Pine Island Group? And he did. I went there. I got another white chip. And we stayed for the 7 o'clock meeting, and then he left, and I stayed for the 8:30 meeting, and then went on home. And Wednesday morning, I found what is now still my home group, the Good Morning God group up in over in Sunrise. Because I needed a group that met 7 days a week and that didn't start too early. So 10 o'clock in the morning was just right for me, because I'm still working nights. And I walked into that meeting, and now I was ready to do those other steps. I was ready to redo those five and just complete the process. You know, what the book would describe as I had been beaten into willingness. So I did. And then I pulled those Joe and Charlie CDs down off the shelf and started listening to those in my car. Invaluable information. The book made sense now. The whole book, the whole program made sense to me. And I was able to go on through those steps and recover very nicely. Then, you know, I was at my sponsor's 26th anniversary. And it was I got sober on November 6, 2006. His 26th anniversary is the following January, so I've been sober, you know, 2.5 months. And after the meeting, he grabs me and says, come on, let's go in the kitchen. Go in the kitchen. We start breaking down the coffee pots and stuff. He says, you know, 26 years, I've always had a job in my home group. And that made a lot of sense to me because, you know, we don't talk about that circle and triangle much anymore. But service is part of that triangle, and it has to be. For my program to be complete, there has to be a little bit of service involved. So my group managed to make me secretary before they gave me a red chip, which was interesting. Then the position came open for GSR, and I went to general service. Everybody here done general service? These meetings are so long. I was actually a little bit relieved when my work schedule changed and I had to go in at 2 instead of 4 on Sundays, because now that I had an excuse not to go to general service meetings anymore. But the intergroup rep, their meetings were earlier and their meetings were shorter. And I was able to become the intergroup rep for my home group. And then the secretary's job became available. I did a year as a secretary. And then our treasurer and vice chair, for very good reasons, chose not to continue in service. So I got to go straight to chair. And it was an absolutely thrilling, thrilling year for me. It was invaluable, invaluable experience in a service capacity. And I was particularly thrilled because I knew that was the year that we were going to be publishing the group Broward County Gets Sober, which was celebrating the 75th anniversary of Broward County Intergroup. And I knew that in the back of that book, there was going to be a list of all the intergroup chairs to date. And I knew my name was going to be the last one on that list. And let me tell you, my ego got up on a trampoline and started doing backflips. And the book comes out, don't you know, 4 other Bob H's on the list. I was crushed. And then I got to do a year as past chair. And believe me, let me tell you, and Timmy will probably agree with me, if I'd have known past chair was going to be so much fun, I would have done it first. It was great. Intergroup has been such an integral part of my recovery. I've been able to do the steps according to the instructions in the book and enhanced with the help of the 12 and 12. I've been able to find fellowship in my meetings and in functions like this and, you know, doing the gratitude dinner. But it's been in the capacity of service that it's a part of my program I absolutely, absolutely would not have wanted to miss. And I want to thank each and every one of you for being here today to help me stay sober.